Welcome to the weekly Life Mint podcast, where we tell you about our favorite stories of the week. I am Preetha Banerjee and I have with me Executive Editor of Mint, Anil Padmanabhan, sharing with you his favorite stories of the week. Okay, so the first story on your list is titled, How NIFT is Falling Apart at the Seams. So NIFT has been in the news for all the wrong reasons ever since the announcement of the chairperson, the former cricketer, Chetan Chauhan, has been announced. But this story somehow talks about how Chauhan's appointment might be the least of NIFT's worries. Why did you choose this story?
Precisely for that reason. The thing is that Chetan Chauhan's symptom, like fever, you know, fever is not the disease. So Chetan Chauhan just is the crowning glory of a series of bad events that have hit NIFT. And the tragedy of NIFT is that they saw it, this trend, so early. It was set up somewhere in the 90s. And this is much before liberalization took off and the international boom in fashion hit India. And today it's a big industry in itself. So you saw a trend so early, you prepared for it. But it's a classic tale of a public sector failure that you anticipate things, but execution is so bad that you end up missing out on a great opportunity. And now you're compounding your mistakes by even more mistakes. So this is like a downward spiral for what was started out as a great idea initially. I mean, I hope at some stage they do recover the lost ground, but that's why. And I think this is a lovely profile which went once again beyond the rhetoric in a classic Mint way, you know, of going deep into a story.
Yeah, it sort of took the focus away from the Chetan Chauhan controversy. So next on your list is Charles Assis's Mint on Sunday column titled Make Every Moment of Your Life Count. The headline makes it sound like any other feel-good, uplifting story. But why did you find so outstanding to include it in your list?
I think maybe it's because I'm middle-aged too, and like Charles Assisi, and somewhere that connected, I think for the young of India who are about 65% are less than 35, this may not strike them so honestly as it did to me. But the thing is that we are always chasing deadlines in our lives now. You know, a deadline of a party, deadline of a meeting, deadline of a date, deadline of a lunch, deadline of our work. So, you know, we are so caught up with chasing various finite, what we think are finite spots in our calendar. We forget that, you know, of standing back and reflecting, you know. I remember this, I don't know who was the poet who said that, what is this life if full of care? You know, we have no time to stand and stare. So Charles Assisi suddenly kind of said what was in my mind, and he wrote about it in his own experience. And he gave a very good experience about how he went scuba diving. He has issues about water, and he went out into the sea and just did it because he was nudged on by his cousin or niece who egged him on, and he took it up and went. So I thought this is a great moment of reflection for me. And there's so many things we think we can't do. Like, I think I can't play music. I love music. I love musical instruments. But in my mind, I don't think I can play. And to me, Charles Assisi said, no, that's not the way to do it. You actually can, you know.
I'm definitely going back home and reading this story. So the third one on your list is a piece by our columnist Shobha Narayan, titled An Ode to Indian Radio, where she shares a few anecdotes about the iconic radio announcers of the yesteryear. Like, there are some interesting names like the AIR announcer Melville DeMello and Amin Sayani. So was it like a nostalgia trip for you reading this story?
Oh, completely. I think it was tremendous nostalgia because, my generation has actually seen the, you know, several transformations of India, and unlike your generation. So what happens is, when you look back, it was a different era of where the only form of entertainment was radio. I mean, I remember growing up listening to cricket commentary, you know, historic wins like India beating England under Ajit Wadekar in the 70s. So all we had was a radio commentator, I think it was Melville DeMello himself, who was at that point as a kid, so I don't recall precisely. So it was like a moment, you know, it was
Even the independence was announced.
Republic Day.
Republic Day.
Yeah, and Independence Day, definitely. And the Prime Minister's speech was broadcast. So, you know, it was our way of connecting. So, there was a sense of community associated with radio, which today's day and age, we are so self-reliant units, you know, because of our smartphones. So, and there's no community orientation anymore. So, I don't think, you know, we see these kind of iconic characters. Like, all these All India Radio characters didn't stand out because they were exceptional artists. They stood out because precisely because they were the sole people on their island, you know. So, but yes, in a sense, we all connected as people. So, I missed that, and reading this piece took me way back down memory lane, and once again, you know, middle age blues.
So now you have completely turned yourself away from the radio.
Oh, no, I'm a big fan of radio. Of course, now I have moved on because All India Radio is very difficult to follow it with given our mobile lifestyle. So I am a big fan of NPR now, and I listen to them in podcasts more than actually tuning in on those times. So we like tune in radio. We have all got it on our smartphones. Yeah. No, radio listening, I have scaled to a new high. But this was pure nostalgia.
Nice. Great. The next one is a data story, which tells us how expenditure on studying abroad has declined for the first time. Why do you think this story is so important?
See, this is actually a very numbers story, and they gleaned it from the balance of payments data, which I think 9 out of 10 people won't know what it is about. And it's basically India's foreign exchange transactions, a balance sheet of India's foreign exchange transactions. And these two reporters made the effort of going through it, and there are segments on that on where you spend your foreign exchange. So there is this new trend in India in the last 4 or 5 years where people, or more actually, more than a decade now, where some people send their kids abroad for studying, whether it's undergraduate also now. Earlier it used to be a master's and a PhD, but now more and more there are young people going abroad to study. So for a host of reasons, this trend fell and they captured it. So to me, one, it was a data story which was told to us in a very nice way, in a touchy-feely way. It connected us to otherwise very geeky data. Secondly, it also put the spotlight on aspirations and how in a globally interlinked world, because of devaluations, because of Brexit, because of all these factors, even your personal aspirations are now extremely vulnerable in this new India.
So it's like all of us had this in our mind somewhere, but it's been backed by data now. This story is just backed by data. The next one on your list is not one, but a series of stories which we have been doing on smart cities. And it's not just this week that they've been published, they've been published before this as well. But the one story that stands out from this week's host of stories is Osama Manzar's column on how citizen engagement is equally or more important as compared to infrastructure when it comes to building a smart city. So do you want to talk about this whole package of stories on smart cities?
Yes, you know, actually it's a little difficult to pull a full package, but to me, smart cities is a great idea, but somehow, somewhere along the line, it has become this magic bullet, you know, for all the problems that ail India about urbanization. And that is where this pullout kind of captured the myth and reality. So the piece you're referring to, Osama's, is actually spot on. He says that urbanization is not made up of our cities and not made up of concrete structures of Wi-Fi, roads. It's made of people, you know, that how you design your architecture, how you design your city, and how that forces people to engage each other. Like previously we talked about how we have become self-reliant units because of smartphones, which is precisely what we're doing in this new kind of urbanization, which we imported from the West. A classic case is gated communities. I mean, I grew up in a concept of muhallas and you know, little communities, and I know the value of those bondings. I mean, I'm not imposing my personal preferences, but people like Osama are talking precisely of that, that urbanization has to look at people. But it's not just Osama, a host of other people. There's a very accomplished architect in Swati Ramnathan who's given a fantastic interview. Again, looking at, you know, giving a reality check to this whole idea of smart cities. So to me, all of us who look at urbanization, who are part of the urbanization process from the fact that we do stay in these kind of metros, I think it's a very important read to get a reality check about this idea, which I think is very transformative potentially. But I just hope it doesn't lose its way in public policy like normally everything else happens in India.
Right. So there's one other story you wanted our readers to take note of. It's by Himanshu and it's titled For the Rich, India is as good as a tax haven. What's so striking about the story?
One, he's my favorite economist. I think he's India's best development economist. Okay. And he puts the spotlight in this day and age on what Brecht would call those who live in outside in darkness. Mm. And he does it in very unique ways. And in this, he talked about, you know, how whenever we discuss subsidies, there's this great argument among, cliched claim made by a lot of economists, investment bankers, analysts, that, you know, subsidies is a bad thing. Mm. So, I entirely agree with Himanshu that you can't make these blanket judgments on subsidies because some of them are actually holding people from abject poverty. But he says it, instead of saying it in this way, he says in a different way about how we do subsidize the rich in this country and we never question that. That is taken as a way of life and taken for granted. So he spins it and in his own unique way, he says it's actually a tax haven because you get a lot of tax write-offs in this country. That's fair and unfair. I mean, I'm not making any value judgment. But I think to me, I don't think Himanshu's object was the rich being taxed. It was more to highlight about those who live in darkness. And to me, that's why this story is important.
Right. You know, last week when we were wrapping up, you told me how you were looking forward to Messi's magic on the Sunday Copa America game. But then Monday came and the big announcement and it looks like exits haven't left us after all. So what do you have to say about Mexit?
Yeah, it's the one word I think sums it up. It's Mexit. I'm deeply disappointed because I think an extremely talented footballer has left and rather too early because he was just about 29. But he knows his body best and he knows it's a very taxing game and playing 90 minutes of football is not everybody's business. But it's a sad loss. I mean, nobody's irreplaceable, but there is this mercurial talent that keeps springing on the world stage, and he was one of them. And it's rather interesting that he has never won a serious title for his country. He's always choked on the world stage. You know, I simply marvel at this concept because I draw parallels to the South African cricket team, which over the last two decades have been one of the most talented sides in the world. But they have always choked on a World Cup win, either in a semi-final or in a final. Mm. Somehow they have missed the boat. So I don't know what is it with champions, you know, that what does it take to be a champion? And I think Messi may not be formally anointed a champion, but to fans like me, and I'm sure you, he will always be a champion in our life.
But do you think it was an emotional knee-jerk reaction?
Can't say, because it's his call. Possible because that was a very bad defeat. He played very badly. And I guess he took it personally, missed the penalty too. And it was inexplicable. And I just don't know why he did it, but probably. I mean, these are athletes whom we can't figure out how they think because we don't know how they play so well. So I don't know. I leave it to him. It's his personal call. It's a loss for us. And I'm sure World Football will find a new Messi some sooner, if not later. But yeah, it's a loss.
So there's no Messi this weekend, but what are you looking forward to?
Oh, the Euro is on.
Ah, life goes on, Messi.
Yes.
So these were Anil's top stories for this week. Let us know what you think by emailing us at feedback@lifemint.com. You can also follow Live Mint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening and see you next week.